we're taking a look at some of this week's top stories in national politics. President Trump is visiting El Paso and Dayton today after this weekend's mass shootings in those cities. Meanwhile, Democrats are calling for the Senate to reconvene and vote on gun control legislation passed earlier this year by the House. Our question for you this week, what new laws regarding guns do you want to see Congress pass, if any? Do you think there's anything that could realistically make it to the president's desk? Are there other measures related to mass shootings you think need attention? And how would you judge President Trump's tone and statements in the aftermath of these two shootings? Let us know by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Turkel is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Since the last two shootings, Democratic lawmakers have been pressuring Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to call senators back into session to take up gun legislation. Here's a listen to Minority Leader Chuck Schumer appearing with Republican Congressman Peter King.
We're saying to Leader McConnell, do the right thing. Gavel the Senate into an emergency session so we can take immediate action on the bipartisan, already passed gun legislation that Peter and others successfully shepherded through the House of Representatives.
How much pressure is there being exerted right now, Amanda?
There's quite a bit of pressure on Mitch McConnell. I mean, the Democrats have stood together and pretty clearly said, look, the House, which is controlled by Democrats, has passed background check legislation, which would close a couple loopholes so that people who buy guns at gun shows and on the internet wouldn't be able to get around background checks. And so we closed that loophole, and Democrats are saying, we passed this in the House. Now it's up to Mitch McConnell to bring the Senate back and do it there. Mitch McConnell has given no indication that he is going to do that. Instead, he has said that he has asked three of his top committee chairmen to look into bipartisan solutions. It's not clear what that is, but so far he doesn't seem like he's going to pass the legislation Democrats passed.
If he did decide to bring the Senate back into session, what would that look like? Is there legislation ready to be debated and voted on, or where would they be starting if they did?
Well, there would be the House legislation that's already passed, so he could take that up. Again, he doesn't seem like he's going to do that. So we don't know exactly what the Republican chairman are looking at right now. Trump has said today that he would be supportive of some sort of background check legislation. You know, Trump changes his mind a lot. And when he gave his speech on Monday, he didn't talk about background checks at all. And then previously he tweeted, I believe it was a tweet, he said that he would be interested in background checks tied to some immigration legislation so he could push through his immigration agenda. And then you would also get background checks. And I don't think Democrats would be interested in that at all. So it's not clear what Trump will actually support and where Republicans will go. But there is pressure around the country. You know, after these recent shootings, three recent shootings, people want to see something happen.
And the House is also on their break. Has there been any talk of them coming back in response to these shootings?
There was a little bit of talk of whether they should, the House should come back and do more, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sort of put a stop to that and said, look, we already did our part. We passed legislation strengthening background checks. And so she wants to keep the focus squarely on Mitch McConnell rather than coming back, passing something else, and sort of muddying the conversation a bit. So their line is, we passed this, now it's your turn.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Nick in Beloit is up. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to say?
I think right away we need to finance metal detectors. We can start with schools. Obviously, that'd be a good place to start. You have a single entrance metal detector there. Maybe we need them in all public buildings. I know it's a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money on military equipment that, you know, isn't really going to fight this enemy. We want to protect our country, so that's what the military's for. Well, we got to start protecting me when I go to Walmart today, and my daughter and my unborn grandchildren. That's one thing. Obviously, we can't be selling military-grade things to people. None of that at all. And if you want to buy a gun, let's put you through some of the measures we put people seeking an abortion. Let's put you through some of the things, watch a video, give you maybe a mental test, blah, blah, blah. There's quite a few common sense things. But these families whose lives have been destroyed, they need to see something done. Maybe it isn't going to work, but it's a multi-level solution. And I think one of your other questions was, how did we feel the response was?
Yes.
My God, what is a sign of really kind of not caring or paying attention? Did anybody mention the city of Toledo in this?
All right. Thanks for that, Nick. So Nick brought up a lot of other measures, both things like metal detectors, but then also, for instance, it sounded like a ban on assault style weapons. Amanda, what types of gun control or legislation are even being talked about? Are some still totally off the table?
I mean, you know, bans on assault weapons being talked about, it's unlikely that will pass. That seemed to be a more distant measure. The other thing that's being discussed are what's known as red flag laws, so that if someone is deemed to be a risk, officials could temporarily take away their guns. And that seems to be getting some support, not only from Democrats, but also from Republicans. And, you know, the call to do something is also just not coming from Democrats. Susan Collins, a moderate senator from Maine, said she wants to close loopholes in background checks. There was Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, who, of course, teamed up with a Democratic senator, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, for stronger background checks. He would like to see more done. Mike Braun from Indiana wants to see red flag laws. So, you know, I think people are feeling the pressure on this.
We're talking right now with Amanda Turkle. She's Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. We're taking a look at some of the biggest stories out of the state, nation's capital this week. And President Trump is visiting El Paso and Dayton today. And even before his arrival, leaders in those cities were having very mixed feelings about him coming. What were we hearing from them?
There were protests, first of all, greeting Trump. People lined the streets, and there was one of those baby Trump balloons mocking him when he went to Ohio. But you had Senator Sherrod Brown, who initially said he was not going to meet with Trump and not appear with Trump when he visited, but he changed his mind and decided to, and said he wanted to talk to him face to face. And later he and the mayor of Dayton held a press conference and said, like, Trump needs to end his divisive sort of hateful rhetoric. But a lot of officials, Democratic officials, also spoke up, including in El Paso, and said that they just didn't want Trump to come at all. He has not helped the situation. He has fanned the flames of sort of this hatred and bigotry, and they just didn't want him there. But he decided to come anyway. And he did not allow reporters in what's known as the pool to come along and take pictures when he was at the hospital, because he said it wasn't a photo op. But interestingly, just a few minutes ago, his team was tweeting and sharing photos and video from it. So he didn't want the press along, but he sent out his own pictures.
There was actually a message from some of the healthcare workers in El Paso who were treating the victims from the shooting, saying that they did not want the president to come. What came of that?
I mean, you know, he is, so I don't believe that Trump has done his El Paso visit yet. He has done the Dayton one. But, I mean, right, there's, you know, a lot of people, we heard in Dayton that a lot of people, they may not agree with Trump, but they wanted to respect the office, and so maybe didn't speak up. Again, the press was not allowed along on these visits, so we don't know what was said. But he's definitely getting resistance. There are, you know, some of the people who he will be meeting with are fans of his, but there are a lot who aren't. El Paso is, you know, a little bit different than Dayton, because the shooter, the alleged shooter, seemed to be more specifically targeting Latino members of the community. And that's a community that Trump has really targeted with his rhetoric. So I think there is maybe more sort of raw emotions there toward the president.
Joan in Eau Claire is on the line. Let's go there. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
It's really unfortunate. It's very unfortunate that so many of these politicians that we have allow themselves to be owned by the NRA. The NRA contributes to a lot of political campaigns. And, you know, so there's a great effect on elections with that money. And so then these elected politicians are very compromised when it comes to any kind of legislation that would come across their desk with regard to gun control legislation. I think it's a travesty. And I do know that there are parts of the country where you, if you sue a gun company, which you can't even do in Colorado, but if you sue a gun company and you lose the suit, then you are required to pay for the law costs, the legal costs of the opposite side.
All right. Thanks for that call, Joan. And Amanda, it certainly is true that the NRA has been a very powerful lobby in Washington. It's also a very interesting time because the NRA in some ways is in quite a bit of disarray with its leadership. Do you feel, Amanda, having watched a lot of these politicians in the past, is there a little opening here for politicians to maybe inch a little closer towards gun control than they might have felt comfortable doing before?
There definitely is. And I think that is going to be an interesting point. You know, the NRA after these mass shootings is usually pretty quiet. And then they wait a few days before they come out swinging. And, you know, like you said, the NRA, though, right now is in disarray. They're facing, you know, people in their leadership resigning. They're facing investigations into their finances, their rank and file. Staffers and some of their members are incredibly unhappy at the way they've spent their money, you know, lavish spending on people at the top. So, you know, what I'm going to be watching is how the NRA reacts after this shooting. Are they too unorganized to really regroup and mobilize as they usually do after mass shootings? You know, are politicians feeling more emboldened now? I'm not sure. I think it's a little too early after the shooting, but certainly sort of anti-gun and gun control advocacy groups are feeling more emboldened. They have more money. They have a lot of people on their side, specifically young people who have been mobilizing. And I think, you know, politicians are feeling that they can just speak out against the gun lobby a little more.
We're continuing our talk with Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief at the Huffington Post. We're looking at some of the week's top news in politics. And Amanda, last weekend you were at the Public Service Forum hosted by the Public Employee Union AFSCME. You interviewed 19 of the Democrats running for president, and the shootings actually happened during that event. Can you talk a little bit about how they responded?
Sure. It was a little surreal because I was on stage basically for about 6 hours with one break. And, you know, I didn't have my phone, so I wasn't really getting information. And then someone off stage passed me a note that there had been a shooting in El Paso and that there were 18 people shot. And I didn't know what that meant, if they were dead or if they were wounded. And then Beto O'Rourke came on, and it was the first public comment he made about it. And he was incredibly emotional, holding back tears, you know, talking about what the community meant and what was going on. And his remarks were just very, very raw. And then we, instead of talking about the labor issues we had planned to be talking about, we obviously talked to him about what could be done on guns and things like that. And then he immediately, he did talk to the press afterward and then immediately canceled the rest of his events for the day and went back to El Paso. And, you know, he's still there and he is no longer going to the Iowa State Fair as planned because he's focusing on his community in Texas. And then throughout the day, the candidates came on stage and all of them gave remarks about it. And that was largely how I got my information through the day as the death toll went up. And, you know, it was pretty shocking and horrifying to hear what was going on. And then to, you know, candidates talked about not only what to do on guns, on white nationalists, white supremacy, and things like that. So it, you know, we still talked about labor issues at this forum, which was supposed to be the focus, but you couldn't ignore what was going on in El Paso.
Sure. And how much variation did you hear between these different candidates on the issue of guns and things like white supremacy?
I mean, I think where you had the candidates agreeing is that something needs to be done. You know, stronger background checks is something they agree on. And that, you know, not every candidate called out Donald Trump by name, but, you know, there is a consensus in the Democratic Party that, you know, President Trump's rhetoric has divided people, that he has encouraged some of the worst instincts by people like these white nationalists, you know, and on Twitter and things like that. And since then, you know, you've heard people, I think, call Trump out more forcefully on Monday, his speech saying that, you know, we have to reject hate, we have to reject bigotry and white supremacy. Just felt pretty hollow, considering a lot of what Trump has done and how he launched his campaign in 2016 and sort of how he conducts himself on Twitter. And so I think you're seeing candidates, you know, pretty willing to come out and talk about him, as you saw Joe Biden today doing a speech.
Let's go back to the phones, and Charlie in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for your guest is the following. Several presidents in the past have generated so much animosity that it seems like they were the only ones who could actually do major things. I'll give an example. Only a anti-communist like Nixon could have gone to China, and only an anti-Russian such as Reagan could have gotten the nuclear arms deal that was signed at Reykjavik. I guess my question would be, isn't Trump the person who might be able to get a gun control law finally passed because of the animosity that he just drive within the United States?
Thanks for that call, Charlie. And Amanda?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, of course, the question is Trump going to really do anything? But yes, if Trump suddenly had this sort of change of heart or decided that he's, you know, so outraged by these shootings and actually wanted to push for background checks, stronger background check legislation or something like that, you know, he has such a committed base of supporters that I think that he could get it through. You know, Mitch McConnell is going to, I think, listen to him. You know, again, Trump has not gotten into specifics, so I don't know if he's actually going to do that.
We're talking with Amanda Turkle. She's Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. We're looking at some of the biggest news stories out of the nation's capital this week. And at that AFSCME forum that you're at, Amanda, obviously unions have been seen as a real backbone of the Democratic base for many, many years. This was a labor organization. And what were some of the main issues that seemed to be at the forefront for union members in this election coming up?
Well, we solicited, not only did the other moderator and I question the candidates, but we solicited questions from the AFSCME members because we wanted to hear what they were concerned about. And just the big concern is, one big concern is healthcare, in other words, student debt. But a lot of them just wanted to know, are these candidates going to protect unions? You know, I think there's a feeling that, you know, obviously President Obama was a friend to unions, but he didn't always talk about unions as much as they would have liked. You didn't hear him use really, really pro rhetoric and give pro union speeches all the time. And that is different than what's going on now in the 2020 race. Candidates are incredibly pro union. You're hearing them talk about unions and the importance of the labor movement all of the time, even the more moderate candidates. And, you know, every one of the candidates stood together at the forum when we asked questions and wanted more collective bargaining rights for public employees and things like that. So I think there's a lot more agreement that unions are important. And, you know, right now, obviously, they're all competing for the endorsements of various unions. In 2016, they came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton pretty quickly instead of Bernie Sanders for the most part. This time, they are waiting to see because their members are a lot more divided.
And briefly, in other news, the president signed a federal budget deal late last week. Usually, I think this would be bigger news, but there's been a lot going on. Can you tell us a bit about what ended up in the final deal?
Sure. It's a two-year bipartisan budget deal. And basically, it means that there won't be, you know, we won't hit the debt ceiling and create this economic crisis for the country. And it seems more likely that we won't have the government shut down in September as we've, you know, had to deal with before. So it raises the spending $320 billion over current levels. It lifts the debt ceiling for 2 years. You know, so there was some grumbling about the fact that it's a two-year deal, which means that the next president is going to have to deal with the debt ceiling, which is always the point of negotiations of, you know, is one party going to hold it up to try to extract concessions from the other? And this kicks it to after, you know, if Trump loses, it kicks it to the next president, which could be a Democrat, and a Democrat could have to deal with it, for example. So, you know, and importantly, it ends the sequester, which was supposed to be this thing to get parties to work together and come up with budget deals. But it you know, it didn't actually work. And all it did was make sort of severe budget cuts. And I think everyone's happy to see that over.
And who do you think came out as more of a winner, Democrats or Republicans?
You know, this is certainly good, I think, for Republicans, because the Trump administration, Trump was lobbying for this. They don't want to deal with the debt crisis. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, Democrats are happy the sequester is over. They don't want another government shutdown. So I think a lot of people were just happy to move on with this. There were some Republicans who didn't vote for this because they didn't like the fact that it didn't cut down on spending more often. And again, there were some Democrats too who weren't too happy with it.
Well, Amanda, thanks as always for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. She was with us for a look at the top political news this week. You can still weigh in on whether you want to see action taken on gun control at the federal or state level. What would you like to see? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR.